The program you are about to hear is not an ordinary radio program. This program deals with facts and ideas that the controlled media don't want you to know. But it is precisely what they don't want you to know that you, dear listener, most desperately need to know. For there is a war being waged against our nation, our race, and our civilization. A war which Americans and Europeans are losing. Losing because of lack of knowledge. Prepare yourself for a challenging and truly educational experience. Broadcasting from the studios of National Vanguard Books to listeners on every continent, this is American Dissident Voices.
For planets, for styles, we will work, we will toil, heaven and fall on the earth. But heroes will rise as we shout to the sky, we will now have our birth. For planets, for soil, we will work, we will toil.
Hello, and welcome to American Dissident Voices, the only uncensored radio program in America. Your speaker, Kevin Alfred Strom. Today, we will be taking on a big subject, but I'll do my best to introduce it in the 30 or so minutes which I'm allowed. On this program, we usually delve into the hidden facts of America's decline and Americans' dispossession. We explore crucial issues which have a bearing on the future life of our nation and on the life of the race that created our nation. It is important that we do these things because, as any longtime listener to this series of programs knows, the controlled media are certainly not going to give us the facts that we need to know to retake our country. But I would be remiss if I did not offer my listeners from time to time a broader, overall, long-range view of our patriotic movement. What I will do today is to step back from the minutiae of social and political issues and events and attempt to answer what are really the ultimate questions. Why should we, or anyone else, make sacrifices for our nation or our race? Why is it important for our race to survive? What is our basis for saying that some acts are right and good and others are wrong? I can think of no better way to introduce this subject than with an essay written by Mr. Martin Kerr, entitled, White and Proud. There is a lot of talk these days about black pride, Jewish pride, Hispanic pride, even gay pride. In fact, there is only one major segment of the population which is not encouraged to take pride in its heritage and in the achievements of its ancestors. That group is the white race. The lack of white pride is truly a sad and strange thing, because no group has more to be rightfully proud of than the white people of the world. The glories and greatness that the men and women of our race have won over the centuries should serve as a source of eternal pride and inspiration to white people everywhere. Since the dawn of history, we have been a mighty race of builders, explorers, artists, warriors, inventors, philosophers, and cultivators. We have sailed the seas, tamed vast wildernesses, scaled towering mountains, and journeyed to the depths of the ocean and into the cold void of outer space. We have built great civilizations, created breathtaking works of beauty, and made the deserts bloom. The technological achievements of our people, from the megalithic calendar of Stonehenge to the moonwalk of the Apollo astronauts, are unequaled. We have devised sublime philosophies, conquered deadly diseases, and performed soul-stirring acts of heroism and self-sacrifice. We are the race of Shakespeare, Leonardo da Vinci, Beethoven, and Homer. We are the sons and daughters of Leif Erikson, Christopher Columbus, Sir Francis Drake, and Magellan. We are the folk of Alexander, Caesar, Napoleon, Washington, and Robert E. Lee. We are the descendants of Pythagoras, Galileo, Copernicus, Newton, and Darwin. Just to list the great accomplishments of our race would require the work of a lifetime. No one has more to be proud of than we do. In order for an individual to be psychologically healthy, he or she must have a clear-cut sense of identity and self-worth. And for our race as a whole to be strong and healthy, white people everywhere must develop a sense of racial identity and racial worth. There is no better way to attain this very necessary level of racial awareness than in having pride in your people and their accomplishments. So take pride in your race, pride in what we have achieved in days gone by, and pride in what we will yet accomplish as we reach for the stars. There is something about our race which makes us indisposed to brag or talk very much about our accomplishments. We feel it is bad form, bad manners, and furthermore, we see it as a sign of weakness. Our instinct tells us that the inferior man will flap his gums and tell the world how great he is to cover up his lack of real achievement and character. The superior man has no such need. And we often apply this principle to our race and our nation, as well as to individuals. We see excessive chauvinism or nationalism as ungentlemanly and somehow suspect. This instinct, which may be allied to our race's inborn tendency to seek out objective truth and discount subjective feelings, seems a fine and noble instinct, and it has served us well and made life more tolerable for the millennia that our people lived almost exclusively among their own kind. But in the distinctly unnatural environment in which white Americans now find themselves, where we are mixed with and jostled by 1,000 different tribes and peoples in what used to be our country, this reticence to blow our own horn can work against us. For our unspoken, instinctive acknowledgement of our own preeminence and that of our civilization is no longer enough. Our instinctive pride of race and nation is now attacked on all sides by peoples who have no such reticence and among whom the virtue of humility is unknown. An entire generation of Americans has grown up in an environment in which the news media, the entertainment and music industries, the major publishing houses, and the public school system have all spoken with one voice. And that voice has said, "White people are the cancer of the earth. They have enslaved and killed and polluted and destroyed everything they have touched. There are no differences between the races except skin color. White people have no right to keep their nations white. White people have no right to live and work among their own kind. There is no reason for the white race to survive. Racial mixing is the inevitable wave of the future. White racial feelings are a manifestation of ultimate evil. It would be better if all the races mixed, so there would be an end to the white race, and thus to white racism." It is vital that our young people be given an antidote to this alien poison. It is vital that they be given back, to the extent that it is possible, a pride in their people and the will to survive as a people in the dangerous, hostile world into which they were born. That is the mission of this program. I know that Americans are reluctant to speak about race. I know that they look over their shoulders and lower their voices when about to utter an unapproved thought or statement. But we must overcome this reluctance. In our present situation, it can only be described as suicidal. We must succeed in the mission of this program because we must survive as a people. In ages past, no one needed to explain that. We knew it in our hearts, in our souls. We knew we must survive. It was the unspoken assumption that made our work worthwhile, our cooperation necessary, and our patriotism vital and alive. In today's urbanized, globalized, money-oriented, multiracial society, though, we have lost touch with our souls, with our true inner spirit, with our instincts. We are more rational. We demand answers and reasons for everything. Western man stands at a point of crisis, partly brought on by his own questing spirit, and partly by the aliens and traitors who have purposely shaken our will to live. For today, we ask ourselves, why should we survive? And the answers given to that question are usually incomplete and unsatisfactory. Often they depend on an interpretation of ancient religious writings, the relevance and meaning of which are subject to endless debate and disagreement. There must be an answer to that question, which does not contradict our true religious feelings, and which also does not contradict the observed facts of nature. Why should we survive implies another, deeper question. Why are we here? In a way, that question answers itself. Why are we here? Why are we alive in this incomprehensibly vast universe, on this mote of dust that we call Earth, that hangs suspended near the trailing edge of one among billions of galaxies, which each contain a billion suns? What is it all about? I said that in a way, the question answers itself. Now, I am not saying that we have complete and specific answers to every aspect of that question. Many gaps remain in our knowledge of the evolution of matter and of life, for example. But we have achieved, through uncounted eons of upward development and struggle, the ability to understand ourselves and to understand the processes of life and of the universe to an almost infinitely greater degree than any other creature on this planet. And we have developed a moral, or some would say a religious sense, that leads us onward and upward toward greater knowledge, toward truth, truth which gives us greater mastery of ourselves and of our surroundings, and toward the ability to understand nature and even to pose questions that would have been inconceivable only a few generations ago. For all of our hard-won knowledge, however, the best men among us know all too well that we cannot, at this time, fully answer the question which I posed a moment ago. Our quest to understand the majesty and the meaning of creation has left us with a profound realization of our own limitations. If we are to understand the purpose of our lives and the destiny of the universe, if we are to answer my question of why are we here, then we most urgently need to surpass ourselves, to increase our understanding and our knowledge 100-fold, 1,000-fold, 1,000,000-fold. Merely because the best men of our race represent the highest development of consciousness on this planet at this time, that is no reason to believe that a higher development is not possible. Aware of our limitations and of our inability to honestly and completely and certainly answer the ultimate questions of meaning and purpose, we must see now, with unblinking eyes, the certainty that at our present stage of development, our mission, our purpose, must be to do whatever is necessary to continue this process of upward development. Our purpose must be to make possible the answering of those ultimate questions by laying the groundwork for a higher humanity, a higher consciousness, which will be able to answer those questions. To fulfill this mission, we will need better scientists, more profound philosophers, more creative inventors, and more responsible leaders than have ever existed before on planet Earth. ask you, ladies and gentlemen, is that the direction that America is taking today? Are we still advancing? Still heading for the stars? Or are we headed for the gutter? At the beginning of this program, I asked another important question. What is our basis for saying that some acts are right and good and others are wrong? In other words, what is the basis of morality? Our answer to this question must not be at variance with our inborn moral sense, nor must it be based on any absolutist dogma which cannot be carried out in the real world. For morality to have any meaning at all, it must be a realistic guide to action. If you believe as we do, that our purpose on this earth is to continue on the upward path, to advance, insofar as it is in our abilities to do so, the struggle for a higher, nobler consciousness, then the answer to that moral question becomes obvious. First, we must realize that despite all our imperfections and shortcomings, that the gene pool of our race represents the highest development that nature has yet attained. It is our most precious possession. Our present stage of development was reached by countless generations of struggle and natural selection, but it can be destroyed beyond any hope of repair or restoration by a single selfish and thoughtless generation. We must never allow our gene pool to be corrupted. Nature's gifts to our people must be jealously guarded. Secondly, we must recognize that these gifts of mind and spirit and beauty, which mark us as a race apart from the rest of mankind, were attained only as a result of a relentless winnowing of our people over hundreds of thousands of years in accord with nature's inflexible and unalterable law of survival of the fittest. We must also recognize that our civilization and our technology have, over the last few millennia, largely shielded us from a continuation of this winnowing process, thus slowing or even reversing our upward development at the genetic level. Armed with a love for our people, with the will to fulfill our destiny, and with our scientific knowledge, we can return our people to the upward path and become conscious agents of our own evolution. In short, the answer to our moral question is this: whatever is good for our people, for our race, in the long term, is good. Whatever will advance our race toward ever higher levels of physical and spiritual development, whatever brings us closer to that destiny which our Creator intends for us, is good. And whatever threatens the survival of our people, or which puts us on the downward path, is evil. This moral standard must be relentlessly applied to every individual, to every institution, to every organization, to every religion, to every proposed program or course of action, and to every expenditure of money in our entire society. When seen through the lens of a true morality, the scales fall from the observer's eyes, and the hypocrisy and treason and criminal waste of our time and our inheritance become painfully, almost unbearably, obvious. I'm sure that you've said to yourself, "White Americans don't stick together anymore. We are a divided people, and the enemy's strategy of divide and conquer is working very well." Our people think of themselves as Democrats or Republicans, conservatives or liberals, Christians or free thinkers, Baptists or Catholics. The whole fallacy of that line of thinking is that it gives primacy to what a person believes. If a person shares our beliefs, it is thought, then he is one of us. If a Hottentot or Jew professes a love for the Bible or the Constitution, then he magically becomes a Christian or an American. Rather than giving primacy to what a person believes, however, we ought to give primacy to what a person actually is. Our race and our nation are one. And every member of our people, regardless of the brainwashing to which he has been subjected and the alien belief system which has been stuffed down his throat, is one of us. And within our souls lie the same spiritual urges which motivated the greatest men of our race to give their all so that our world could be born. Let us not shirk our responsibility to pass on that heritage, increased, not diminished, to the next generation of our people. Ladies and gentlemen, we cannot continue our patriotic publishing and broadcasting efforts without your support. If you think that we are doing a good job in educating and informing our listeners, if you agree that the time is now for a serious patriotic effort to reclaim our nation from the decadence and treason that has sapped our wills and robbed our children of their birthright, then I am asking you to help us. Write to National Vanguard Books, P.O. Box 90, Hillsboro, West Virginia, 24946, USA.